For CertSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westerveld. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for April 30th, 2008. Thanks for listening. In this edition, security luminary Howard Schmidt discusses the state of cybersecurity. Also the news, a massive SQL injection attack is underway, and a researcher develops a new way to compromise Oracle databases. Next, my interview with Howard Schmidt, but first, this message.
Check out CertSecurity.com's newest Identity and Access Management Security School lesson, using IAM tools to improve compliance. In this lesson, expert Tom Bowers reveals how to save money, plug the holes in your IAM strategy, and most importantly, improve your compliance efforts. Go back to school today. Visit CertSecurity.com/IAM school. That's CertSecurity.com/IAM school.
And we're back. Howard Schmidt served in the position of Chief Security Strategist for the U.S. CERT Partners Program for the National Cybersecurity Division, Department of Homeland Security. He also served as Vice Chair of the President's Critical Infrastructure Protection Board and is the Special Advisor for Cyberspace Security for the White House. He currently is a security strategist with security consultancy ISC Squared, and I met up with him at RSA Conference 2008.
Howard, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming with us this morning.
Let's talk about the souring economy and how that could have an effect on IT budgets. Some people say it's not necessarily going to have an immediate effect, but it could be a longer-term effect.
Sure, yeah, I think we all worry about that. And that's one of the things when you start looking at the tension on businesses as the economy gets tough. When you look at the reduced spending, you look at the reduced investment we have in some of the companies, and one of the first things that normally goes is investment in something that appears to be optional. I'm worried as much this time as I might have been 5 years ago. I think we've really got a proven track record. Look at the security professional investments we've got today. We're training people. We're getting people certified. We're getting people saying, yes, you have to keep us secure, not only to prevent something bad from happening, but to help enable our business. So if there's going to be a reduction of spending, I think it's going to be more equal across the board as opposed to sort of cutting out of the security budget all the way.
So security is not going to take a big hit, you don't think?
I don't think it will. And I don't think anybody with good business sense would let it happen because it's too much of a risk to the overall business. Plus, we've got that other layer that we oftentimes lament in some cases, and that's the whole issue about governance and compliance and risk management and stuff like that. That's keeping us a little bit more on our toes of saying, yeah, you really can't do that because good governance requires us to have this in place.
You talk about good governance, and there's this compliance mentality, over-compliance mentality. Are you seeing that? Are people really focusing too much on compliance and a little less on the bigger picture?
I wouldn't say too much, but I think some of what we see in some environments, we see some emphasis put on there that may actually detract from our ability to be secure. And as one of the discussions as we've had with a number of my colleagues this week about just because you're in compliance, just because you meet the regulation doesn't necessarily mean you're secure. And so we've got to take that in mind. And when you start looking at all the mechanisms in place to validate compliance, you don't want to do that to such a level that you actually can't do the day-to-day work needs to make you real secure.
Secretary Chertoff came to the conference for a visit. What's your initial takeaway from his keynote?
I think what he said was something that we have all recognized for a long time and we're really struggling with is how to take information that we get in the private sector, how to infuse it into the government that actually have some meaningful effect on the way they protect their systems and in some cases protect the country as a whole from national security and public safety issue. But probably more important is how they can take the information that they get from foreign intelligence sources, from other mechanisms of collection that they have, and get that into the private sector. For a long time, we've really lamented the fact that they probably have good information. And in some cases, we've seen instances where they've got good information, pass it on to one of us that has security clearances, but says, well, yeah, you can know this, but you can't tell somebody in your operations to do anything with it because that would reveal the sources that we're using.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about some of the
points he made in the keynote. One was on Einstein, some of the difficulties the government has had with Einstein. Can you talk a little bit about why Einstein seems to be faltering at this point? At least that's Secretary Chertoff's view.
Well, you look at the huge size of the enterprise for the government. For the most part, the government has been like 27 plus different companies. And once you start trying to look across the visibility of all that, that's a pretty daunting task for anybody, the scalability of it, the efficiency of it, and just building the technology across all the different platforms that, for the most part, in the past, every department sort of has chosen their own path to go. So, you know, when we were talking about this money with Greg Garcia, one of the issues was initially you're looking at some cases 4 to 5 weeks before you get the information you need. They've been able to reduce that down to a matter of hours, and the goal is to make it as close to near real time as possible. So it becomes indeed a response mechanism that gives the ability to somebody to take an action now to prevent something more dramatic from happening.
Do you believe Secretary Chertoff's vision of having this real time analysis and detection is possible? And where does the private sector come in there?
Well, I think, yes, I do believe in it. And that's one of the things I think that we all, as we've looked at this, you know, once again, not being critical, but some of us said we should have been heading down this path 5 years ago. We recognized that we were becoming a bigger target. We realized that the infrastructure that we had built over the years was not sufficient to withstand at all different quadrants, the hits that we get all the time. And so one of the steps, for example, the Trusted Internet Connection, the TIC project, reducing literally thousands and thousands and thousands of points of presence down to a manageable 50 or so points. That's the sort of the first phase of this. But the ability to deploy it, I think it's really wonderful, and I believe in that.
One of the areas that Secretary Chertoff was talking about was getting all of the agencies to meet some sort of baseline minimum security. Is that really possible, every single agency?
It is, as a matter of fact. And that's the one big difference between government and private industry. Government can just mandate it. They can mandate, says, thou shalt and shall not do certain things with your desktop configurations. And we've seen some small glimpses of that over the past few years. Department of Energy originally with the Secure Oracle deployment. Air Force coming out with the Secure Desktop configuration. So we're starting to see some pockets of that. Those have been proven to really be successful. And so it's then you've got a good model. You move forward and say, okay, this is the way we're doing it from henceforward.
And let's talk a little bit about these domain access points. There's over 1,000 of them. And Secretary Chertoff wants to bring that down to about 50. First off, why are there so many at this point? And is 50 a realistic goal?
Well, there's so many just because, once again, as the network has evolved, somebody looks for a way to connect to the internet, connect to some telecommunications resources, and without a whole lot of, you know, long-range planning of what this will look like, they just evolved. I mean, we've seen the same thing in private sector. This is not uncommon to see that. And I've heard numbers ranging from 2,000 to 4,000 as far as the different connections. Getting it down to 50 is tremendously realistic. Like I said, we've seen it in large enterprises reducing from 200 to 8. And so when you look at an organization the size of the government, that's not unrealistic. My only concern that I've had on that is the time frame involved. Having been involved in a number of IT projects over my career, the best planning in the world, the best project management, you always have something that doesn't quite work. You have a shipment that comes in delayed. You have some configurations don't quite work out. I know the folks that are in charge of it are committed to that date. I know they're going to work their tails off to try to get it, and I'm hoping they do, but that's the only hesitation I've had on it. All the other components that I'm aware of, the concept itself, are all rock solid. They're based on good, solid security principles, and as a security professional, I think that's a good move on their part.
What was the time element, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think it was released last November, and I think the completion date is sometime this summer, early fall. So it's a pretty aggressive schedule, particularly for an enterprise as large as all the government has been in trying to get those sort of under one level of control. But when you look at one of the fundamental premises of security, the more complex a network is, the more difficult it is to secure. And this really reduced the complexity significantly.
One of the areas that the government is looking to do is to tap into the private sector talent out there. What's your view? What are you seeing? Is there enough young talent?
Yeah, and that's a couple of the really interesting things, because what we see, you know, some folks, even like myself, that go into government, go into private sector, so you have that really cross-mixing, which really, I think, not only for us personally is very important, but also it gives us the ability to give new perspectives on things. The second thing from the new talent thing, that's really an interesting thing, we start looking at the workforce development and the students that we're bringing out of college now. One of the really successful programs we see is the National Scholarship Partnership for Service program. We started that about 5-6 years ago, creating NSA was part of the program, actually identifying universities of centers of academic excellence in information security, information assurance, National Science Foundation helping to fund that, putting students in there with the discipline on a one-for-two basis. Every year of college, then they do 2 years of service, or excuse me, every 2 years of college, 1 year of service to the government. And it really, really is a great program. I was just talking to one of my students last night, as a matter of fact, that's talking about the next group that's graduating from one of the universities. They've all got great places they're going in the government. They've all got their CISSPs. They're all ready to go. And so you've got a ready-made workforce. The thing that we need to continue to think about is if you look at sort of the cycle of the way we've run society, and I'll give you an example in the law enforcement world. Back in the 60s, we had a lot of unrest, a lot of things going on, and so the law enforcement cadre in the federal government sort of build up. Well, the general cycle is 20 to 25 years, those people start to retire. The need to hire new people in the interim wasn't so great, so you start getting that dip. And then in the 80s, of course, we had all the problems with the drugs and the smuggling and the and organized crime and stuff. So they built up again. And here we are almost at 20-year point once again. The same thing is starting to take place in the information security business, which is why it's important for us to make sure that people are getting certified, to make sure that people are getting trained. And so we have people in the pipeline as those of us that sort of are on the tail end of our career, we've got good, rock-solid, trained people that can walk in, not understand the technology, but also understand the business needs of security.
And now the news. Hundreds of thousands of websites have been compromised by a successful SQL injection attack. Researchers at White Hat Security say the attack was carried out over the last 10 days. Attackers are using simple search engine queries to build a list of vulnerable websites to target. They're also looking for ASP or PHP sites. The attack is a complicated SQL injection. It is nearly a paragraph in size and fully encoded, enabling it to elude intrusion detection systems. Cleanup for websites that have been victimized is a problem. Site owners have had to manually search their database tables looking for offending code, or they could restore the database from a backup version. A new SQL injection technique is threatening Oracle databases. The technique was devised by security expert David Litchfield, called a lateral SQL injection, can be used to compromise Oracle databases remotely. Litchfield outlines the technique in a new paper on the subject. He uses creative coding and some knowledge of the way an Oracle database management system works. An attacker does not need local access to a database to carry out the attack. Litchfield of NGS Software said the problem may not turn out to be easily exploitable in the wild. Well, that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcast by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. You can also check out the latest security news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.